You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and RadioCafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. Today on the Radio Cafe, we're going to be talking about New Mexico's energy future. What would it be like to transition to renewable energy, and what are we doing to make that happen? All that in just a moment. Networks are everywhere, from our friends on social media to the colliding particles in our universe. But the most complex networks we engage with are the ones inside our own brains. Join the Santa Fe Institute Tuesday, February 12th at 7:30 at the Lensic to learn how we can use network science to think about ourselves. It's SFI's first community lecture for 2019, generously underwritten by Thornburg Investment Management. Reserve your free seat at lensic.org. I'm very happy now to welcome Ben Shelton. He's Policy Director for Conservation Voters New Mexico, and Teresa Cardenas is with the Union of Concerned Scientists. And we're here to talk about some energy bills that are in the New Mexico legislature. Welcome.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you for having us.
Good to have you. So one of the things that we are talking about and that has been the subject of a lot of conversation and in a lot of people's minds, it's time or overtime to get going on, is what's called the Renewable Portfolio Standard. There's a bill before the legislature that would require 50% renewable energy production or electricity production by 2030 and 80% by 2040. Tell us about that. Is that all about utilities like PNM?
So this is a bill that would affect both utilities and smaller rural electric co-ops. So it treats them slightly differently, but they will both be affected by this. They will both be required to deliver to customers inside of New Mexico 50% energy from renewable or clean energy sources by 2030. And they would both be required to make sure that we are a completely decarbonized electrical sector by 2045. So zero carbon emissions, 100% zero carbon emissions by 2045, as well as 80% by 2040 with some protections built in to just make sure we're not hitting people's bills very hard.
So that's a huge transition. How ready are we at this point to do that? I mean, are we talking solar and wind primarily? Are there other energy sources that are being brought in?
There are some other complementary energy sources, things like biomass, geothermal energy. The big sort of X factor right now that is developing and is a bit kind of emergent is storage. We're getting so much better at building batteries and building them cost effectively and building them large to scale that is something that's going to continue, I think, to drive the prices down. I will say that, you know, to go to your question of are we ready for this, for those first targets of 50% by 2030, yes, absolutely. The utilities in this state can do this right now. Our renewable energy resource here between the sun that we get, the great wind resource that we have in eastern New Mexico, we are absolutely ready. The things beyond 2030 are what the renewable portfolio standards have always been, which is aspirational and designed to drive market, to drive research, and drive technology development. So when we first passed these renewable portfolio standards back in the early 2000s, renewable energy was more expensive than, say, natural gas. That's not the case today, and it's because of renewable portfolio standards that we've seen the cost of clean energy plummet to the place where it's now cheaper than just about everything.
So the Union of Concerned Scientists, we're a national not-for-profit organization based in Cambridge. They were founded about 50 years ago by scientists and students at MIT who sought to use the power of science to address some of these really complicated, wicked kinds of problems that we have. So what they do is they put rigorous independent science to work, helping inform the policymaking process. So the UCS came out with an analysis specifically for New Mexico that really does reveal our opportunities. And what this analysis reveals is that renewable energy, not gas, is really the best way to go. It's the state's lowest cost long-term solution. Strengthening the RPS would help ensure that transition to clean energy actually takes place. So that's the primary importance of it.
In order to get to 80%, in order to get to 100%, as you were saying, Ben, you have to have energy storage because, you know, the sun is only up during the day and less so in the winter, and the wind doesn't always blow, and it blows harder at certain times of year, which aren't necessarily the times of year when we need the most energy. Talk more about utility scale energy storage. People have been talking about there, for example, solar plants that store energy in salt. There's people who are talking about using solar energy to pump water uphill and then have hydroelectric energy when it flows back down. There's lots of ideas, lots of things being talked about. Are batteries, are they ready to go at utility scale?
It depends at different scales and at different on kind of on the grid. I will say that right now, as you look probably at, you know, between now and 2045 and 2050, where most people are sort of setting targets for where we want to be, the idea that we can have battery storage and just sort of hold electricity to sort of release when we need it the most is a little bit new. As people have been sort of putting game plans together around getting us there, it has not necessarily relied heavily on battery storage as a significant component. So that conversation about how we incorporate storage into that broader plan of getting us to 80% and 100% is a little bit new, because to this point, the ways people have been thinking about it are either sort of novel storage ideas like molten salt, like you mentioned, or uphill pumping, or, you know, what have you. But for the most part, it has been effectively developing a smarter and more responsive grid. If you take the sort of idea of energy consumption and energy generation and you expand it across, say, the entire American West, you can move energy around very, very quickly, obviously, moves at the speed of light, in a way that kind of helps everybody cover all the places that you need to get covered at different times of the day. And that has been the primary tool that people have been kind of considering using, is just kind of grid upgrades, because this is something that we need to do anyway. We've got an electrical grid that is designed for the 1950s. I mean, there are really, it really does use these sort of glass jar components still. If you look at, you know, power lines around all around the West, it's the same basic design. I mean, you think about the innovations that we've had in computing and, you know, transportation, all this stuff, and it just hasn't come to the electrical transmission and sort of electric grid yet, and in the way that it needs to.
Is that part of this legislation?
So that is not exactly on point for this legislation. That is something that really the utilities need to undertake on their own. This legislation is called the Energy Transition Act. It's sponsored by Senators Candelaria, Mimi Stewart, and Representative Nathan Small. But it is going to push us to incorporate a lot of renewables and completely decarbonize our grid in a way that is going to effectively force the utility's hand, in my opinion, to actually do this. So this is something that is in the next 10, 20 years, they're going to have to sit down and really have this conversation about how do we change the grid to be more resilient, because climate change puts more stress on our electrical grids, and more modular. You mean this idea of, instead of having one giant grid with a big power plant in the middle of it radiating out to sort of everyone's house, it is looking more like little clusters where you have generation and consumption located closer to each other, and it's more of, you know, balancing sort of regions. So the good news is that we have the expertise already in the state to do that. The national labs do this.
Right.
I know that the national labs in New Mexico were looking at putting together models like these to rebuild Puerto Rico after the hurricane there. So we have the expertise in state already to do this. We have utilities that know they're probably going to need to, so I would look for that. Although that is not explicitly in the bill, that is something that I would look for as a byproduct of it.
Would a more updated grid give you power, solar power, at 4 in the morning? I mean, the time of day thing is still an issue, isn't it?
An updated grid lets you be more responsive in terms of matching up what they call, you know, your resources or your generation with load or demand, right? We know that in the state, for instance, most of our demand for electricity comes when everybody comes home after work at the end of the night and turns on the microwave and the TV and whatnot, which doesn't exactly line up with our solar peak, which is about the middle of the day. So that's an area where storage comes into play. You store all the power in the middle of the day, you discharge it between 5 and 10 p.m., and that's potentially a model. Of course, wind is different. Wind peaks right around the time the sun kind of sets. So it's just about figuring out ways, using sort of technology, things like demand response and smart meters, to kind of line up that peak demand with when people really are using the most electricity.
I think consumers are asking, well, how can I access renewable energy? And this bill is going to really give consumers this power to be able to have access to renewable energy. And of course, it will be over time. It's not going to all happen all at once. We can have other policies that will complement the RPS, which is community solar, as an example.
Yeah, that's another bill.
It's another bill that we're all strongly supporting, because not every person has the ability to put solar on their roof. They might be living in apartment complexes. they might be renting their home and they don't have that control over being able to purchase or rent solar.
Why would somebody want to put solar on their roof in the first place if we're on this path to 100% renewable energy?
I think that it's a trend in that people want to have access to it. And we had a utility company that just wasn't fast enough to bring renewable energy on the grid. So we have an industry out there that is a very viable industry. It's making jobs. You know, it's an economic powerhouse to drive the need for renewable energy. So people have the option of going to their local solar company and buying solar and put it on their roof, and they can actually save dollars by doing that.
I would add, it just fits with the culture of New Mexico. This is a DIY state. People like to
do it yourself.
I mean, people, you know, fix their own cars and work on their own homes and their property here. And I think that goes into it, of just being able to generate your own electricity and generate the electricity that you consume in your own house.
And as Teresa said, with community solar, then municipalities or tribes or communities or whatever would be able to do small scale solar.
You bet. So that's another bill that we've got this year. The Community Solar Act is House Bill 210. That's Representative Patricia Reba Caballero and Senator Liz Stefanik co-sponsoring that. And that will allow folks who don't have the ability for whatever reason, sometimes it's financial, sometimes it's just because your roof won't support it, sometimes it's because you live in an apartment or whatever it is, to get together as communities and subscribe effectively to solar projects in their area and get their power from that and get their power bill reflect the cost of that project. So that's needed right now, because currently you can put those things together, but you have to sort of get the utility's blessing to do it. This would just say people can do this, and if they decide to do it, then Mr. Utility, you just need to make it work for them, and you need to connect that power to the grid, you need to deliver it to them, and you need to bill them for it based on certain criteria. The other thing that that bill does that I think is really important is that it requires that a certain percentage of that program statewide, of all these community solar programs, be delivered to low-income defined customers. And that's really, really important, because what you worry about with putting this in, especially if you have a hypothetical limit to the amount of this you can put in, you do worry a little bit about companies or businesses that have better access to capital and lending taking up the whole program, and low-income folks, and by the way, more than 50% of the population of the state of New Mexico qualifies as low-income, you know, not getting the kind of access that I think everybody agrees that they need. So this actually has a mandate for the PRC that you got to set targets that you must hit for subscribers who kind of meet that low income definition. So we can make sure that sort of everyday New Mexicans and the folks who we're talking about as being the beneficiaries of community solar actually are the beneficiaries of community solar.
Does that mean they're going to be paying less?
I think that everybody who signs up for a community solar project will be paying less, because it is on the tribes and it is on the organizations that decide they want to sort of put together these programs to go and get people to sign up. And if you can't offer people a community solar program subscription that is less than their current power bill, then they're not going to sign up for it.
You know, let's say rooftop solar goes down in price and maybe there's incentives that get stronger and more people are actually using it, and community solar is implemented throughout New Mexico. Have you done the math on how much a bite that would take out of the demand for utility-generated electricity?
It's just so hard to know how this stuff is going to act when you get it out there. We know from polling and just from talking with people for years that everybody in New Mexico pretty much wants to see a lot more clean energy on the grid. We don't know how that intention and how that desire is going to actually translate into dollars and cents in megawatts when it really gets out there. So I know certainly the utilities are concerned about losing market share, especially because they are for-profit companies, and the smaller their market share, the smaller their rate base is, or the number of people who are paying rates, the smaller the population is they have to recover their costs of delivering energy from. So it kind of puts them in a tight spot, because they need to go figure out more efficient ways of delivering energy to people. And really, increasingly, that looks like renewable energy. It doesn't look like gigantic, expensive gas and coal and nuclear plants. It looks like lightweight, cheap, small, renewable energy, wind and solar facilities.
Is nuclear energy considered renewable?
So nuclear is zero carbon. So as we think about having 100% zero carbon electricity sector by 2045. That will include some of the existing nuclear. So El Paso Electric and Public Service Company of New Mexico do get some of their power from the Palo Verde nuclear plant in Arizona. There is no way that nuclear energy does not compete on cost with renewables or really anything right now. It is among the more expensive kilowatts you can buy anywhere in any fashion. New Mexico has a really, really fraught relationship with nuclear energy because we get the pointy end of the stick on both ends of the life cycle. We lost a generation of Navajo people getting uranium ore out of the ground during the Cold War. We are still dealing with the health impacts of that today. We still have unremediated tailings piles sitting literally on top of communities. I mean, I'm talking kids playing on radioactive toxic tailings piles. And then on the other, on the disposal end, we are currently embroiled in a controversy around whether or not southern New Mexico is going to become a sacrifice zone for every piece of nuclear waste for the rest of the country. How are we going to build our economy around taking the most hazardous radioactive toxic materials on the planet and burying them in the desert in our backyard? So, you know, this is a sensitive thing. I would say under moving towards a zero carbon electricity sector, there is no foreseeable path that includes acquiring any new nuclear energy, period. What this would do would allow the utilities to operate the Palo Verde nuclear plant, which they currently have, in the capacity that they currently have been, which is set to retire between 2045 and 2047. So that would be preserved. The operation of that existing plant would be preserved under this, but there's just no economically foreseeable way we would wind up adding more nuclear power.
And I wanted to add that nuclear power uses a lot of water. And as you know, we have a drought in the Southwest, so that could have an impact on water supply in that part of the state.
So nuclear power has its problems, but at least in the short run, utilities will be able to use nuclear to generate electricity.
They will still be able to get that power under this legislation. What we are talking about doing with this legislation and decarbonizing the electricity sector is basically taking coal and natural gas out of it. The biggest part of that, at least in the next 10 years, is going to be coal, because we've got these two large coal stations up around Farmington that are just not economical, and they're also extremely dirty.
What happens to them? They just go offline and PNM or whatever utility eats the losses?
So anytime PNM is going to retire a plant of any kind that they are still owed money on, because remember when PNM puts resources online, when they acquire something like a coal plant or they build a gas plant or whatever, they get to collect their cost of doing that plus a little bit of profit from ratepayers. We have not completely paid off the coal plants, particularly San Juan Generating Station, which PNM wants to close in 2022, which is early, which is a good thing. So as ratepayers, if we want this closed, what will happen if we do nothing from today going forward is PNM will go to the Public Regulation Commission and say, hey, we'd like to close this. We're still owed a lot of money. And they'll make a deal. The PRC will give them some amount of money, some percentage, some amount of their outstanding amount that they're owed on that coal plant. In the bill that we have here, we pick sort of a midpoint of what we feel like the likely outcomes of how much the PRC would give them. And we say, you can have this midpoint. And in return, we want to make sure that there are funds available for San Juan County, for the school district, for the workers in the mines, the people are going to be impacted. So we're not going to just have you shut the plant down and everybody goes home and people in Farmington are just sort of left trying to figure out what to do. We're going to have a transition plan instead.
So job training.
Job training for the workers who are getting displaced in the mine. There'll be funds in there for economic diversification so that the city of Farmington, for instance, can have an economy that is a lot broader than just natural gas and coal plants. They want to do things like invest in their outdoor recreation economy. There are things they can do up there. So in exchange for kind of guaranteeing that midpoint of that, whatever that range that the PRC might give PNM, we get benefits for that local community. And we also get a guarantee of going to a renewable portfolio standard, which means that the power that's going to replace the coal plants is going to look a real certain way. It's going to look like moving towards a decarbonized electricity sector. But I will say, this is an idea that came up last year in a bill that had a lot of other bad things in it. But the core concept of let's save ourselves some money. And the thing is, the ratepayers under this scenario actually save money because it's so expensive to run these coal plants that the minute you stop doing that and start doing something else, people save money. So the question is just how much. And again, the bill kind of hits that midpoint and says, we're going to save the midpoint. And in exchange, we're going to actually have a transition from coal to renewables instead of just shutting the lights off on the coal plant and hoping for the best.
You're listening to the Radio Cafe. We're going to take a quick break. Please stay with us. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation supports education along the cradle to career spectrum by investing in Northern New Mexico school districts, nonprofit education programs, and community projects. Education and community grants of up to $2,500 are available to qualified education programs that serve the counties of Los Alamos, Mora, Rio Arriba, San Miguel, Sandoval, Santa Fe, or Taos. 2019 grant application deadlines are February 15th and August 15th. For more information or to apply, visit lanlfoundation.org/grants. That's lanlfoundation.org/grants. And now back to our program. Do you expect there to be less disease from the pollution that is generated by these plants?
You know, yes. In short, there are a lot of harmful environmental outcomes from burning coal. Not just, I mean, the big one is obviously air quality, and we have federal guidelines, you know, regional haze standards and all sorts of things designed to limit the amount of air quality impacts that we're getting from coal plants. But the other big thing that people don't talk about, in my opinion, enough, and we're going to have to talk about this, is coal ash. There's a huge amount of ash that is full of like arsenic and all sorts of terrible things that's just out there. Coal plants around the country have tried storing these in ponds. They try putting it underground and burying it, and it's very, very nasty stuff. Even if you bury it, it gets in groundwater. You put it in ponds, the ponds overflow and spill, and now you've got arsenic in your river. So there are a lot of reasons for human health and limiting human impact and exposure to not be burning coal for our electricity.
And someday we will do the math on how much we save in healthcare costs as a result of clean energy.
That's a really great point. And it's something that's really hard to get a handle on, especially in the Four Corners area, because it's a very spread out rural community. There's a huge amount of Navajo families up there that live kind of off the grid. So in terms of collecting health data, it's really kind of a challenging thing in San Juan County and the Four Corners area to figure out, well, what are the impacts on, say, children and the elderly who are really, really susceptible to lung inflammation and sort of respiratory problems as a result of all of these industries up there, because the way we track those is by emergency room visits,
right?
Which is a lot of the people up there who get asthma attacks aren't going to go to the emergency room. They're going to go to a local health clinic. Maybe they're not going to go anywhere, and they're just going to kind of
live with it and have chronic illness.
Yeah, exactly. And how do we track that? So, you know, I want to sort of manage expectations a little bit for the huge, you know, statistically measurable impacts for human health, because we don't have great data up there right now, but we know for a fact that we know this is going to help human health if we can shut down these coal plants.
So utilities, as you say, are private companies, but they are publicly regulated. And now there's this bill, which if it passes, will really tell them how they do their job or what their job is. I mean, they figure out how to do it, but what is the public role in overseeing this transition?
So this is something that's actually changed a little bit, in my opinion, in recent years, because it used to be the case that you pay the bill, the lights stay on, and no one asks any questions. The PRC is there to make sure that the bill is as low as possible. That's just not the case anymore. So what we are seeing are public agencies and watchdogs like the PRC, the Public Regulation Commission, and the Attorney General's Office increasingly starting to reflect the will of the people who voted them in, which is, it's not just the lights stay on and I pay my bill. It's, I want to see this certain kind of energy, and I want my community to participate in our energy economy in a certain way. So it's a much more nuanced role that we are seeing public entities start to take. And it's, frankly, it's a transition. The utilities are adjusting to being asked these kinds of questions, and it's new territory, particularly for giant utilities that don't have an easy time changing the way they do things or changing their culture, like PNM. PNM's enormous, and it's not easy for them to sort of start thinking about, okay, well, people don't just care about the bill and the lights staying on. They kind of actually care about other things, and we need to figure out how we posture ourselves to be responsive to that, because now we're starting to get questions we've never gotten before from groups like the Public Regulation Commission and the Attorney General's Office and the legislature, who really are pushing these utilities in directions or in ways and kind of accessing pressure points that they're not used to. So everyone's kind of changing. I mean, this really is a time of, it's an inflection point for the entire energy economy in the state, not only because we are looking at retiring all of these coal plants and having a huge shift in where the resources are. But yeah, it's a culture shift. Utilities are having to learn a different way of being in relation to their ratepayers, to their regulators, and to just the people in New Mexico.
What is the role, Teresa, of the public? In other words, have you been hearing them in your role at the Union of Concerned Scientists speaking out on this, both in New Mexico and sort of nationally?
Oh, absolutely. The public really has an open door to their legislator, and we have a community-oriented legislature, so they are available, they're accessible. Our legislators are going to be in a place where they can really make a huge difference to pass this legislation. But it's up to the public to reach out to their legislator and say, this is what I want. I want clean air. I want to have renewable energy at my doorstep.
What does all this mean for the economy of New Mexico? I mean, on the one hand, there's a lot of talk about jobs being created. On the other hand, there are, you know, things like lost revenue from the severance tax, royalties, property taxes, all the things that go along with the oil and gas industry. I mean, does this mean a decline in the oil and gas industry in New Mexico?
So, yeah, I'm really happy you asked that. That's a great point to clear up, is that the oil and gas production economies in the state are really a separate thing from our consumer electricity generation. Of all of the oil generated in the state, we use 0% of it to keep the lights on.
Because it all is being used for fuel or whatever.
It gets refined, and mostly thinking about the Permian, for instance, in the Southeast, it gets refined and sent to Cushing, where the price of West Texas intermediate crude is determined. So that is what happens with the oil. With natural gas, which comes out of both the Southeast and Northwest parts of the state, a very, very small percentage of the natural gas produced in the state goes into electricity generation. So what is going to happen? What's going to replace all this coal? And there's a risk there, because if we replace all of this coal with natural gas, we're going to be in the same place in 10 years that we are today, where we've got a huge amount of money on the books for these plants that ratepayers are on the hook to pay off via PNM or whichever utility it happens to be. And we're looking at much cheaper renewables and thinking, well, how the heck do we get these things off our books so we can get into something much cheaper? And if we build out a lot of gas today, we're going to be in that same position that we are in now. And then we're also not going to be taking as much carbon out of the electricity generation economy. So that's why it's really important to have that Energy Transition Act in place, because it provides that guidance to utilities of, listen, by 2045, we can't have any more carbon coming out of our electricity generation sector, which is a signal to utilities as you are planning, because utilities, remember, they plan on 20-year long timelines. So it says to them, as you are planning your next 20 years, know where you need to be and make your investments and make your plans accordingly. So that's a really, really key component to the, I think, the Energy Transition Act, is that completely decarbonized electric sector. The impacts on oil and gas, and again, the immediate impacts are virtually nil. And the other concern, of course, about oil and gas is that the price of particularly natural gas, if we go to burning natural gas as our primary electricity generation source, you think the price of a barrel of oil is volatile. And in New Mexico, we know exactly how volatile the price of a barrel of oil is, because our economy and our state budget really kind of swing up and down with it. The price of natural gas is even more so. I mean, the last 5 years, the natural gas, you can't see me right now, but I'm wiggling my finger up and down drastically, because that's what the price of natural gas does. And if that is what our power bill is going to be tied to, that's just not a situation anybody wants to be in.
So our analysis does show repeatedly that renewables beat out natural gas when it comes to providing electricity at the lowest cost. So again, that's why we need this policy in place to assure that we can make this transition affordably.
Are there any mechanisms in this bill, particularly the Renewable Portfolio Standard Energy Transition Bill, are there any mechanisms that would keep a future legislature from just undoing these standards?
A future legislature can undo any bill that's on the books right now. They can amend the Constitution. They can repeal absolutely anything. So there is no way to write a bill in a way that's going to future-proof you from future legislative action. I will say that what this does is puts utilities on a course where, because utilities make large investments and they make them on 20-year timelines, if we can get these utilities on the right course, then it'll be very, very difficult for future legislatures to come in and say, hey, utilities, you have to completely undo all this. Because when you ask utilities to undo things or restructure, it gets extremely expensive to ratepayers for utilities to do these big course corrections. This is what happened in California. California has really high power bills because after Enron, the entire utility sector needed to restructure, and they're still paying for it in California. So what we do with the Energy Transition Act is we put the utilities on a trajectory that is the cheapest for ratepayers. That is the renewable energy trajectory. Because when you transition energy, which we are doing right now with retiring these coal plants, it always costs money. Because you got to pay for whatever is delivering you electricity. So you might as well pay for the cheapest thing you can, which right now is solar plus storage, wind, and you know a sort of a sprinkling of other things to sort of help balance it out. But if as long as you're basing your generation around those sources, that's the cheapest trajectory. So I worry a little bit about people feeling like, well, you know, it's going to cost money to do this RPS stuff. We're going to be paying a lot of money no matter what, for whatever our next big generation sources are. So let's pay the least amount possible. And that's the renewables, that's renewables. And that's what the Energy Transition Act did kind of get us going on.
But I also wanted to mention that there are national trends. They're not stopping anytime soon. I mean, there's a number of states that have already taken on high renewables, like Ben mentioned, California, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Nevada, a number of other ones. And we can't stop what's already happening. Renewables are going to be our future.
And that is driven by the public. Ben Shelton is Policy Director for Conservation Voters New Mexico. Teresa Cardenas is with the Union of Concerned Scientists. If people want to get more involved in all of this and making their voices heard, what can they do?
We have a citizen legislature. You can walk right in there. You don't have to make an appointment. The doors aren't locked. You walk in the front door, you find out where your legislator's office is, and you walk up there and you walk in and you can sit down. I can't recommend it highly enough. It actually is a very unique thing that we have in New Mexico nationwide. These are folks who are your neighbors and they want to hear from you. So please reach out and connect with them. You don't have to know every detail of every bill. You can reach out and say, this is how I feel about where we should go. This is my feeling for what I want our energy economy to look like. This is what I feel about having clean air and clean water. And they'll know what you mean and they'll know what to do with it. So you don't have to have an advanced degree in any of this stuff. Just speak up and make your voice heard because there's just so much value in it and people in there are aching to hear from their constituents and not just lobbyists like me.
And that you can also telephone them, you can send an email, you can send a letter.
Anything and everything you can do, yeah, they'll take it all.
Ben and Teresa, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having me.
Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation strengthens education in northern New Mexico so that learners of all ages can reach their full potential. Offering grants that fund public education and community projects, building resilient children, families, and communities through early childhood programs, providing K-12 wraparound services for students and teachers with Inquiry Science as the flagship initiative, investing in students' dreams through scholarships, and creating a solid foundation for learning and systemic change through partnership and advocacy. For program information or to give, visit lanlfoundation.org. You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next time.